evening, everybody. I am currently standing atop a very high building, and I am threatening to jump unless Akiva Goldsman is removed as the producer of the new Fantastic Four movie by the end of the podcast. And since this podcast is being pre-recorded, the chances of that are very slim. So, yes, this will be my last show tonight, to the amusement of my fellow co-hosts.
It was nice knowing you. It was nice knowing you, buddy.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to miss you. I'm really going to miss you, man. you don't really like Akiva Goldsman, do you? I hope we got that across. I mean, I know
who
you're being
likes
real.
Who likes Akiva Goldsmith, though? Really?
I'm going to say Akiva Goldsmith. That's the go-to answer, but I'm going to say his mother likes
him. It's not so much that. I mean, I don't personally dislike the guy. I just don't like everything he's. No, honestly, how the hell can you hate someone you've never met? Well, I suppose it's possible, but I don't
hate his
him.
Work.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
Hate his work, and I just don't understand how he keeps getting attached and being put in charge of high-profile projects, which the studio are hoping will be, you know, franchises.
We know what it is. I've explained this before. It's the same reason why the Broccolis keep hiring those guys back. There's pictures of them, you know, having sex with babies somewhere. He's got them in his drawer, ready to pull out any second now. It's like, we need someone to do Fantastic Four, and he's like, I'd like the job. I don't know, dude, didn't you do Batman really gay? And he's like, oh, what's this picture I just found right here? Oh, what's this? And then he got the job all of a sudden. That's the way I see it, but I could be wrong.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Jamie just put the image in my mind of Akiva Goldsman in sexually compromising photographs. Yeah, I think goodbye, cruel world. Good night, everybody.
I think of that joke from the South Park movie where, like, Conan O'Brien kills himself. And, like, you guys remember, like, all of a sudden it hits a car? Huh?
Together. No.
And like, they have epic music. Someone comes up, click, click, and then he walks off like no one notices that he died. Which would probably happen now since no one's watching The Tonight Show. Yes, mean joke, I know. I don't watch The Tonight Show now. I watched the first episode when he was on. I thought it was okay. But Conan's never been my kind of guy anyway. So, you know, maybe that's just me.
Do the intro, Jamie.
Yeah, really.
It got all Craig Ferguson in here for a minute, so.
Better than Craig Kilborn, to be fair.
That's true.
I mean, you know, Craig Kilborn's idea was, I'm Craig Kilborn, and I'm using sarcasm. So it's like, we're better than that. I'm just saying it's true. But hi, I'm Jamie Williams here at the Movie Moan at ThinkBeforeYouThink.com. The British gentleman you heard earlier was Mr. Phil G, as you all know. As always, joining us as well is our pal Ed Hawken from the coast. Say hello, sir.
Hello there, Ed Hawken here. First, before we begin with our discussion for the night, I'd like to extol the virtues of early drinking. Now, what I mean by early drinking is the fact that if you're going to go out, you're going to have a good time with friends, get there early to the club, so that way you're already loaded. Because if the club sucks, and it may take an hour or two to realize this, you'll be okay to drive. So once again, drink early before you go out. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. Ed Hawken. Also joining us is our pal from up north, from Canada, as always, Mr.
Canada.
Terrence and Philip himself, rolled into one, Mr. Loops.
Thank you. To the four corners of the globe, I send greetings and felicitations. It's a great time today. It's a Labor Day weekend. We're all sitting around chilling.
Yes, we are.
I'm going to go see, for the fifth and final time, Star Trek in IMAX tonight. I'm going to make the big trek to Toronto. And I just got off the Toronto SF Fan Expo last weekend, which is our version of the San Diego Comic-Con. And ooh, I made it to the green room, where I rubbed shoulders with Bruce Campbell, Linda Hamilton, Mary McDonald, just to name a few. And I'm wondering now if I'm worthy of an appearance fee on this podcast.
Oh, of course, as always. As long as you see, you know, as long as you probably ask the immortal question to Linda Hamilton, so what was it like being with Jim Cameron? You know, because that's all people want to know about. I'm sorry.
You know, she's bipolar, so I didn't want to see the big mood swing, so I stayed away from that one.
Yeah, she is? I didn't know that, actually.
Yes, she is.
That would explain her Terminator 2 performance, because, like, I listened to the commentary, and Cameron was, he didn't say bipolar, but him and the other guy, what's his name, William Fuller, or whatever his name, not William Fuller, that would have been a different movie. You know, they're talking about how, I don't remember, I'm not going to look it up, I'm fucking lazy. So, how she was really got into shape for that role, and, like, she only agreed to the movie, other than for a lot of money, of course, which they didn't say, was, you know, I want her to be insane in this movie. And she's pretty crazy in that movie. She's built like a fucking brick house in Terminator 2.
Well, she's 52 now, and I got to tell you, she's still smoking. I was quite impressed.
Yeah, Catherine Bigelow is near 60. I mean, have you seen her lately?
I have, actually. You know, now more recently.
Would have not thought that.
No, so. Man, that's Ed Continuous hard on for the Hurt Locker. She's a Hurt Locker in her own right, ladies and gentlemen. So starting off this news, we're going to get a couple of news items, like two, I think, offhand. And then we'll go into our main discussion this week, because it's kind of the news dead zone, I think, as our pal Ed said earlier, off air, because nothing's going on right now, won't be for a few weeks, little bullshit here and there, major news we won't hear anything about. So, yeah, they're going to do a Fantastic Four reboot, whatever.
Cue the scotch being poured. I can
yeah,
hear
exactly.
The scotch being poured.
It's a drinking.
It's not even good scotch. It's Glenn Levitt.
Well, they got to get it right sooner or later, so they might as well keep trying.
This news doesn't deserve good scotch. That's entirely appropriate.
So you're not a big fan of Fantastic? I mean, come on. Who cares about Fantastic Four? Like, I get why they're doing it. They're
well,
doing
I wrote
it.
A friggin' article on
you did,
it,
which you should check out, by the way, at thinkinflightthink.com.
Yes, it's very good.
I think it's good too, and I'm biased when I say that, so don't take my word over. But you know, it's I don't know, man. It's like they're not gonna make it dark. Who are we fucking kidding? They said that about Superman, and then like,
did they say that?
They made a reference to me it being darker, but that's bullshit, because they said the same thing about Kal-El, and then we were told by one of our sources at Warner Brothers, this is like when Jeff Robinoff said, like, we're going to reboot it, make it darker. Our source was like, well, it's going to be rebooted, but it's not going to be dark. Disregard that last remark. So I feel the same way Fantastic Four. I'm like, yeah, sure, it'll be dark. Well, I hope I'm wrong about that one. But then again, it's a shitty franchise. Who cares?
It is. I mean, I wrote the article and I said, you know, I pitched how I thought it could be better and how I, you know, it has potential to be something magical, you know, something really, really great and something that you can appeal to all ages and not suck. You know, the two don't coincide. It's just the first group of movies we got were so lifeless and they just didn't have the whiz-bang, zippy, adventurous fun of those comics and... But I don't think anything good is going to come of this, and it's a shame.
Well,
but I guess it's meant to be.
The only reason they're making this is for a story. Was for the a story that we'll segue into in our other story of the week, which we'll segue into in a minute or two. You might have heard
to
about
keep
it.
The rights.
Yeah, to keep the rights, essentially. We'll get to that.
Which is the reason the first one got made, isn't it?
It's the reason the first one got made. It's the reason the Roger Corman one got made. And now this is the third time in a row that the Fantastic Four movie is being made specifically to keep the rights. Everyone's saying, like, oh, this is the second time. It's actually the third time. So does that really speak well about the franchise and its potential? It's like, you know, three times they've had to just basically do it just to keep the rights.
Well,
who cares?
Like I said in my article, it must be some kind of a record to say you're going to reboot a franchise literally 2 years after the last movie came out.
Yeah.
You usually wait a good deal longer than that.
Well, you actually make the movie. I think what they mean. You actually.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of that's close to that is The Punisher.
Yeah, and that's another one
that's
no one
true.
Cares about.
Yeah.
At least it's cheaper. At least we can get away with that. But it's like, you know,
three times at bat.
And the sad thing with this last incarnation is that they actually got half of the four right. Like, Chiklis and the guy that played Storm
Evans,
for Torch.
I
think those two guys are spot on, but you gotta get, like, an actor that can be charismatic and cerebral, almost like a Doctor Who, maybe a Dave Tennant kind of actor to play Mr. Fantastic, because that's where everything revolves around. If they don't have a good leader, then it doesn't really matter what they do with those movies.
I hate to fantasy
cast.
Can
you say his name, Luke? Can you say his name? Because I like to hear Americans and Canadians say Welsh names.
Eoin Griffin. That's his name. I know.
Thank you. Very good. Well done. Some people call him Eowyn.
Well, it's
just can't say it.
It's understandable why. It's not because we're being idiots, which we usually are. It's because you just don't know the way it's pronounced. And I was reading Empire, and they actually put it in the side for me, so I felt smart just doing that right there.
Oh.
But, yeah, I know. God bless Empire. Getting my issue next week. Rubbing my hands. I hate the fantasy cast, but, you know, you mentioned that, Lou, about Evans and Chiklis, which I completely agree with. It's almost like you wish that they could just, like, keep them and lose everyone else, which you could do. I mean, you know, they did it with Casino Royale, but they won't do that, obviously. I mean, a year ago, Chris Evans said, like, there's not going to be a third one. He flat out said that. He's like, yeah, I got an option for one more. But
I think
like,
he's secretly disgusted. With those movies, personally, I think he hates them.
I think he totally hates them. I agree, but the thing is, though, that made his career. I mean, he got offers because of that movie. Everyone, even at the time, acknowledged, like, well, he's the best part, so let's give him roles. And it's like, this guy's got such good star. He's so charismatic, and the guy can act, and it's like, God, this guy needs the perfect vehicle for him to break out. And he still hasn't. I mean, he's going to be in Scott Pilgrim. He's got, he just did that movie, what was it, Push or Pushers? Or that sounds like a porno. That movie he just did with Dakota Fanning.
Yeah,
where,
yeah, Push.
Like, okay, Push. Pushers would have been a different kind of movie. But
real good.
Yeah, zing. But
he's,
I mean,
drunk already.
He's got the movie coming out called The Losers, which is based on a more obscure comic book. You know, kind of like, not unlike Wanted, I guess, with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Uhura, and some other people whose name escapes me at the moment. But yeah, I you know, in terms of like who I would, you know, who should direct this movie? In all honesty, is Stephen Sommers. If they really have to get someone, you should give it to Stephen Sommers to direct the Fantastic Four. Because Fantastic Four is a silly property to begin with. It's just stupid, even for a comic book. And guess what? G.I. Joe is stupid, even for a cartoon, and he still made it work. That's the guy who should do it. And I hate fantasy casting, usually, but that's the guy who should do it.
I want to say Blasphemer, but you know what? You're absolutely right. I can't deny it. You're making perfect sense.
Thank you. And I know who... Go ahead.
Yeah, if that's the way they're going to treat the property, then yeah, I guess Sommers would probably be the best choice. But I'd still like to give it to... A better director than him. But,
anyone offhand you would like?
I still haven't. I guess I just haven't given up hope on the franchise yet.
Well, that's fine. You never know. Who'd have thought Star Trek would have been awesome? You know, I'm sure you told it to Nimoy. You're like, I cannot believe your movie was so badass. And he's like, I was barely in it. Like, that's okay. You get credit anyway. You're Spock Prime now. Kids aren't even going to call him Spock anymore. They're going to call him Spock Prime now. That kind of sucks, actually, for him.
Yeah. Well, he's very humbled by the experience, so.
That's true, actually.
It turned out quite well.
That's an understatement. But anyway.
He's close friends with Leonard now, folks. Lou's really tight with Leonard.
Does that mean we're going to get like Shatner on the show? We can ask him. That'd be awesome, actually, if we could get like a real celebrity on here. I'm sorry. I know, you know, you met celebrities, but I mean, like, that, you know. No,
yeah, I know. It's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. Unless you
get the Shat on, would be great. Definitely.
That would be awesome.
I'd love the Shat to hear your Shatner impression, Jamie.
I wouldn't. In fact, think about it. It's like, you know, you're a celebrity. You have people come up to you all the time asking the same shit. And it's like, he's got it even worse. You got people not only asking the same questions, but then they do tons of people do impersonations of him. And very few people actually do a genuine impersonation of him. I think Frank Caliendo probably got the closest to doing it because he didn't do just the classic, like, you know, pause, you know, animated kind of, you know, you all know the Shatner impersonation.
Right.
Everyone does.
We got to get over there.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually think that the Family Guy parody of William Shatner was also one of the better ones as well, actually. If you saw the, I think it was the third episode of Family Guy where they television is banned. It's banned in town. And they did a pretty dead-on, it's not even dead-on, but it's a great exaggerated Shatner, I thought. That's just me. But anyway.
Yeah.
So the other news item this week, and actually it's a pretty big one, major deal, is the fact that Marvel's ass is officially property of the mouse. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Disney bought Marvel.
How eloquently put.
I don't even know what to think about this. Like, I did a little subtext.
You're a wreck, aren't you? You're emotionally disturbed by this.
But the thing is, it's such a weird thing because nobody saw it coming. Like, the one person who was remotely close to was Nikki Finke, and she said in her article, she's like, I got a tip that Disney was going to make a major press conference Monday morning, and that's all that my source would tell me, and that was it. So she knew something was coming, and she's fucking pretty legit. That's an understatement.
Yeah, there was no mention that in the business world that this acquisition was going to happen. Now, I know from Marvel, this is, you know, nothing new. Marvel's been bought out before. There's actually a book about its earlier buyouts called Comic Wars, but it's not. It's a business book. It's
right.
Very dry. Oh. So basically how the company got screwed up the first time around. But, I mean, this is a hell of a deal for Disney, although I have to say Paramount locked into a very sweet deal for them. So
In a way, they did.
Disney's going to get the licensing rights, I imagine.
They are going to get it, but the thing is the deal with Paramount is 100%. People are getting – so it's the same thing with the Superman lawsuit. People are just, like, talking out of their ass the specifics of this thing. The actual deal with Paramount is – they get distribution on, I think, 5 or 6 movies, and that's it. They can't finance them. That's not a part of the deal. Marvel was independently financing these movies. And I think it was someone was on G-Force, Attack of the Show, basically saying, like, there's a chance the mouse could kill Thor in Avengers. No one's backed this up, by the way. I don't want to put where – I think it was David Poland. I forget which where he writes for. I don't know, you have to help me out on that one, Ed, if you know offhand.
Yeah, but Poland is suspect anyway. So.
Who does – yeah. Yeah, he basically said, like, there's a chance the Marvel – they could kill it because one of the reasons this agreement was because Marvel is kind of strapped for cash right now, which, you know, makes – it sounds like it could – there could be some truth to that. I mean, I'm not going to call him an outright liar, but I mean – because I don't know the specifics, obviously. But what do you guys think about this whole ordeal?
It doesn't sound very – just about Thor. I question this because – I mean, it could be right, but I don't see – I mean, Thor has a script – it has a director, it has a star, it has, actually, it's cast several roles,
star
including
date.
Brian Blessed as Odin, God help us, I can't wait for that. But, I mean, I just don't see how, when, you, side budget problems, why you would, as soon as you've taken over a company, why you would immediately torpedo a movie that's as close to getting ready to go as, say, Green Lantern is. You know, we don't know if it's actually going to hit the cameras, but it's as close to as it can get. To date,
Kenneth
Branagh has been attached to this for maybe a year now.
About six months.
Been in prep for a long time, so it doesn't seem very smart to me to for Disney to torpedo it. If it goes well, then it's great for them, and if it goes badly, then it's just, you know, it gives them an excuse to put the boot in and say, okay, from now on, you can screw your long term plans with Captain America and Avengers. We're gonna do it our way. So I don't see why they would torpedo Thor, but, you know.
Who knows? This could mean we're going to get a USA agent movie. And then
yes!
For Phil, we're going to get Excalibur. Captain Britain will finally be on the silver screen.
Hot damn. With Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde, since she joins Excalibur. There you go, dude. You know, there's that whole Juno sequel doesn't work out. Juno 2, the abortion, doesn't get made. So, you know, there you go. So is that. What do you think, Lou? You've been kind of quiet. What do you think about this whole Marvel thing?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm kind of confused about the Thor thing. What studio is going to be putting that out? Is Disney going to be putting it out, or is
Paramount?
Paramount's
putting it out. The deal is like the deal they set up is basically Marvel bankrolls it. Paramount distributes it. This is for a number of movies, starting with Iron Man. And it's about five or six pictures. They basically said that, as I recall hearing, it was like after Avengers, there's one more film left. That will presumably be Iron Man 3. After which, deal's done, and all that shit goes to Marvel. All that shit goes to the mouse. Yeah.
Okay.
But can Disney put up the money for something like the Avengers? Are they able to, you know, finance it?
That's the question. I don't know. I'm so curious about it. I don't think I've heard this from any other places. That's why I'm so intrigued by this, this prospect. I don't know. Certainly interesting.
We've got to point out something, though, in regards to Disney. We're not talking about, you know, the days of Michael Eisner here. We're talking basically It's Pixar operating through Disney taking Marvel, because Pixar basically merged with Disney.
Yes.
So it's you got to keep that in mind, that it's you're dealing with Pixar people here.
Thank God. And they, I will say, in his credit, Bob Iger, who's the current big cheese at Disney, he's smart enough to realize, like, don't fuck with the creative team that's been delivering you a lot of money. Some idiot executives get this idea that, well, it's doing well, so we can replace them. But it's like, no, we don't want to replace the Pixar people with our yes men. We need to let them do their thing. It's working out really well, which is an understatement. So they said that all the current deals are going to stand as is at the moment. Go ahead, Phil.
I was saying, Iger put it very eloquently in this documentary, The Pixar Story, which is on the two-disc Wall-E DVD and Blu-ray. Not that I'm selling it. But he said it very eloquently. He was about to take over the company, and then he went to Tokyo Disneyland, or whatever it's called, and he saw a parade float, and he saw that the only characters on the parade that were from the last decade or so were Pixar characters. All the other Disney characters were from movies they made in the 90s and before that. And so that's when he realized that Pixar's the only talented force they've got in the company right now. I remember when Jamie and I talked about this, I think ages ago when we did the live show there. Jamie, I think, asked me what would be my ultimate, you know, wet dream in the movies to happen. And I think I said Pixar making Marvel movies. Now, that doesn't mean that this is going to happen, that Pixar is going to make movies for Marvel. That doesn't mean that at all. But now, it's possible. It's feasible that people from Pixar, the writers, the directors, the animators, could work on Marvel projects. Just as an example, Marvel makes direct-to-DVD animated movies, and DC make direct-to-DVD animated movies, and DC have always had the edge on Marvel in that respect. I've never seen the Marvel DVD animated movies. They've all looked like crap to me, and I don't like the animation style. Whereas the Warner Brothers at DC animated movies, I think they've been doing great ones. Jamie didn't like Superman.
Yeah, that was terrible. That was an awful.
But still, I mean, that's what New Frontier is fantastic. If you can get some of the animation talent from Disney or from Pixar just to work on a direct-to-DVD Marvel movie, then that's very exciting. Just on that small scale, I'm excited about this deal. Just as one example.
Nice.
Yeah, really, like two creative powerhouses coming together to either work on existing projects that Marvel has or to create something new between the two of them. Like, yeah, I think that's just an opportunity for some really exciting projects down the road.
But what I like the most is the fact that they're saying, like, we're going after, like, you know, second, third, fourth tier characters, not so much like, we're a new Spider-Man, which they can't get Spider-Man for quite a while anyway. But, you know, like, the idea of, like, doing a Nova movie, which might sound silly to some people, but could be pretty badass under the Pixar hands. Even, you know, even something like Rome the Space Knight. You laugh, but I think Pixar could find something to make out of that flick, out of that character. And, you know, so we'll see what happens. But this deal is not going to come into effect for quite some time because all the current deals, as we mentioned, Fox has still got Fantastic Four, Fox has still got X-Men and Daredevil, and they're going to hold on to them. I mean, Chud Zamfirachi pretty much hit the hammer with the nail, or is it the other way around, that the only reason, one of the reasons they're going to do this Fantastic Four reboot is out of pride. It's not because if it goes back to Disney and they really make something awesome out of it, it makes them look like idiots. It's a total pride issue, and I completely agree with that. Sony's got Spider-Man for quite some time. They're already lining up the next three flicks. I don't know who else has got options at the other studios. I don't know where Hulk lies. I think Universal still owns the Hulk rights, but I don't know how much
Fox
longer.
Fox still have X-Men, and I think they still have Daredevil, which is a fucking shame because I want Daredevil to get another chance.
It'd be decent. You could get, like, you know, Ryan Gosling as Daredevil or something like that. Anything other than Jason Statham. I'm sorry, but, like, just not a big Jason Statham fan. I don't get the appeal. Maybe bald British guys. Not my thing, you know?
Well, he was good in the bank job, but unless Statham could do an American accent, it's not, and get a good wig, he's not going to be able to pull off.
No.
See, it's funny, you say that the wig, I'm thinking of Bruce Willis in The Surrogates right now. With the wig on. I'm thinking of that when you say Jason Statham with a wig. I'm like, something is so off about that image.
It's not a pretty picture.
No, it's not, actually. Netflix actually looks pretty awesome, I must say. Maybe I'm wrong on that one also, as always. But
I don't know, it's hard to say, but I mean,
we're all excited about this, aren't we?
It's a good talk.
It's an interesting deal. I mean, I don't know how you could be against it, but it'll be.
And it's like the conspiracy theory of one company's taking over the world kind of thing. Mm. But beyond that, I think it's a good move on for everybody.
Yeah, awesome.
We'll never sell out.
Speak for yourself. Yeah, speak for yourself, buddy.
Who's gonna buy?
I got a stomach to feed, so you know I can't. Exactly, man. Total sellout. Fuck the man. I love the man. You know. So anyway, with that in mind, now we're gonna get to a couple of weeks ago, a little movie called District 9 came out. You know, we all saw. Phil didn't get to see it because of the racist distribution system that the UK has. They hate the Brits for some reason. But
I know, like I said earlier, the Labour government really screwed the pooch on
they
that.
Totally
that was, that's a terrible move.
I figure the whole Revolutionary War, that whole Revolutionary War thing, I think that's still kind of sitting ill with the distributors. I say get over it. We did have two world wars. We got along with pretty well with the Brits. Phil's a pretty cool guy. You know, we did get the Beatles and shit like that. I think it evened out, I think. Yeah. That's my opinion. Phil, what do you think?
Maybe.
Well, at least it did come out. I mean, sometimes, you know, when movies in your country flop, we just don't get them, period. Grindhouse? I've never seen Grindhouse in any way. I protested it because it flopped in your country, and as such, we were going to get it that summer, and we never got it. We never got to see the complete Grindhouse experience. It's not even available on DVD at all, except I think on Japanese imports. So I've never seen Grindhouse.
Well,
so I'm just grateful when they come. I really am just like in an alley, just waiting for.
Does that mean you did get Planet Terror and Death Proof? You just didn't get them together. Is that what you're saying?
We got them in pathetic releases that I didn't even notice. Death Proof came out 1 week and it opened at number 7, which is fucking bad in this country for a Tarantino film, and that proves that nobody even saw it coming out. Anyway, it's not this thing about this. I'm just glad that it came out, and I'm extremely glad that my friends here had the patience to wait for me and not discuss it. I didn't understand it at the time, but having seen it now, I totally get it, because this film is not at all what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be just an alien invasion through documentary-style picture, hopefully smartly written, and it isn't that at all. It's a very personal, character, one character-driven story that's really, really sad. I was trying to think of a better word, but I can't. It's very sad, and it's been a long time since I've seen something that, you know, made me feel so completely two different emotions at once. There's one particular scene where I'm watching the guys try and evict Christopher. That's an alien, folks, for those who haven't seen it. And his son. Well, first they're trying to evict him, and then when it turns out the aliens are a little bit smarter than they gave it credit for, they try and turn around and say that this is an unsafe area for the child, and they're going to take the child away to child services. And, of course, they're swearing and stuff, and once I'm laughing aloud because I think it's so hilariously satirical, and at the same time, I'm just enraged at the inhumanity of my fellow man and what shit.
Well, you're talking about South Africa, though. That's the thing. I mean, in that unique situation, which is what really, really sold this movie for me, is the fact that this is something that's never been examined before. What happens when an alien? Because you've seen, you know, alien race when a ship lands. It's usually in a major U.S. city. Or in a major, you know, first world city.
Right.
What happens if it lands in a third world country? How's the gov? And you know, this is what would fascinate me about more of the backstory, not necessarily in a prequel sense. Is like, how did it affect the history? Because that country can barely get it together itself. What are they going to do with the extra burden of dealing with these aliens? But then I just thought the whole idea of them trying to evict the aliens to be hilarious because they have to supposedly sign the documents. How the hell are they going to sign the documents? And I think I was listening to another podcast that talked about how. Yeah, they don't even have. Wait, what was it? Or. No, never
mind.
You
need to sign this, and they say fuck off and slatten the paper down. They talk
it's like that
us.
Counts as a signature, you know? And I think it was like the idea with Wilkes is that he's being set up to look like the Fall Guy, because it's like. And
basically.
Because he's kind of a boob, and. When he's sitting there in the office, he looks like a South African Michael Scott. That's what he looks like.
He is so Michael Scott. You want to see Michael Scott like be lack of a better word, action hero? And that's really lack of a better term. There's better terms to use that I just can't think of any offhand, but you should check out District 9. Yeah, right. Boy, this movie played differently if Steve Carell had played that part. Shit.
I could say is thank God for the subtitles, because those accents can get very, very thick.
I like the fact they speak in their native tongue for the most part. Like, and the thing I loved about Bastards, it's like they didn't try to do this whole thing where they just speak, you know, the whole time with a bad, broken accent. They spoke English with a broken accent, but for the most part it was their own tongue. And I love that about this movie. It felt so real. And the segue from pseudo-documentary to a movie was seamless, I thought. I forgot all about it. I was like, oh, wait, that's right. You know,
I really thought it was going to be more documentarian. It was because what I had seen from the trailers, and I thought that they were going to stick with that. It was going to be more of the Cloverfield aspect,
right?
And then they just, you know, it doesn't play out of the movie. The fact they just change it up from that to more of a regular narrative with Wilkes, and I'm just trying to, but yeah, that whole world, the fact that you're. I mean, it impressed me a lot, especially with the way the aliens were designed. The fact of all that grit and grime, it's like I never wanted a drink so bad in my life while watching that movie because about how harrowing it was to see that kind of existence, which sadly goes on, you know, in all over the world, those types of slums.
Yeah. Can we just give a lot of credit to this movie? This movie would have been a complete clutterfuck failure had it not been for the lead performance of I can't even pronounce his name. I feel so bad about it.
Copley.
Thank you. I had it written down on a piece of paper. Charlotte Copley as Wickus,
and that guy was
fantastic. He was
so
fantastic.
He does not consider himself to be an actor. There was an interview with him at the Onion AV Club, and he talks about how he's not. He's an entertainment guy. He worked.
He's a producer.
He's a producer. He was a television executive. He's friends with Neil Blomkamp, but he's not, he says he's not an actor. But I mean, that was, as you said, that was a hell of a job.
And, I have not, honest to God, I have not seen, I guess, again, lack of a better term, a pantomime-esque performance where, you know, an actor's having to look at nothing on screen and then they fill it in post-production. I have not seen something that convincing and thorough since Bob Hoskins in Roger Rabbit. Because you heard the guys make it in the behind-the-scenes stuff about Rabbit saying, like, you know, we believed, even without putting the animation in it, Hoskins, in this performance, there was a cartoon right there talking to him. And the same thing with Copley. The whole time, he's talking to Christopher and interacting with him. And there's not a doubt in your mind that Christopher was right there across from his screen. He saw it there in the performance in the dailies shooting that film. You don't see that kind of acting that often. You really don't.
But it's not just that his reaction sells it. Again, you said this a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Avatar. You were making comparisons to District 9, and I didn't understand at the time, but when I saw, you know, the character animations on these bug things, the prawns, I got it. I was really, really stunned. I don't use that word often, but I was stunned by the performances I saw by these characters that just have their, you know, they're like Gromit in Wallace and Gromit. All they've got is their eyes. But they just make you feel every emotion that they can see it.
And they're Dr. Zoidberg tentacle mouths.
Yes.
So.
Except for one, I mean, that was such a fucking great movie. I mean, I will be, yeah. You know, some people want to interpret, you know, now we can go into the Fly Cronenberg-esque aspects of the story, which, you know.
Oh, that was a hell. And, you know, it's funny, when you look at the basic structure, it's like, it's stuff you've seen before.
Oh, you totally have.
But the way, I admit, when they revealed that prawn hand, that was a certifiable holy shit moment right there.
I feel bad
that
for
was,
the dude.
That was.
I feel horrible for the
It
dude.
Was like, oh my. And then when he's trying to cut the thing off, that was just as bad.
Oh yeah, the most intense moment is when they force him to kill the prawn, and he's like, he doesn't hate the prawns, but he's kind of like, I guess
he's a bit of a racist though. I mean, there's that funny scene where they're burning the hatchery down. It's like popcorn. You can hear the popping going.
Exactly.
They just go up and then they explode.
Yeah, I mean, but it's so terrifying when they force him to kill that prawn. Even at that point, he's like, I'm not doing this. No, I won't. And they make him, and it's the most intense.
Cattle prod.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, like, and that's why this. I mean, like. You know, we're going into spoilers, obviously, so, you know, the movie's been out for a month now, so if you haven't seen it, you know, fuck you, why haven't you seen it yet? If you're a kid and you can't get in, find some adult, they'll let you in.
Exactly.
Hopefully. But, I mean, the end, there were two moments where I cheered. I couldn't help it, man, I cheered. It's one shot that's in the trailer that I forgot all about till like, after it happened, was the villain, the mercenaries, about to shoot down Christopher's ship with him and his little boy. And Wickus with, I don't even know what you would call that. I guess the power
sort of
loader.
Mech.
The power loader, I guess, for lack of a better term. I'm saying that a lot. Yeah, I'm saying this a lot in the broadcast, and I just, again, I'm not very well spoken, obviously. But, you know, he grabs the missile. I cheered.
Yeah.
You couldn't help but cheer when he did that. And then at the very end, when it sort of left open-ended of whether or not Wickus is dead or alive, we see that he's alive, I cheered. You go through so much shit with that dude. And to see that he's alive, I cheered. I was like, yes, he's alive! And some people actually interpreted the ending as sad. And I'm like, he's alive! You know, it's very open-ended about you fill in the blanks about what happens afterwards by yourself, which is a similar ending to another movie we're going to talk about in a few minutes. I pretty much interpreted it that Christopher is totally going to come back and cure him. I don't need to see a sequel where we see that happen. I don't want to see a sequel where we see that happen. I'm sorry, but I want to see Blomkamp do something else. Like, of his own. If he says, I got a sequel in my mind, I want to do it, then, yeah, he gets the benefit of the doubt. I totally trust him. But, and they're going to do a sequel, there's pretty much no doubt at this point they're going to do one. But, meh, you know, just whatever.
I for me, the best part of the movie was his journey, or his arc through the movie. It basically took him to become an alien to discover his humanity, which is always a cool concept. And I don't know, maybe Phil can comment on this after I make my remarks, but I do find how interesting it is that being outside the United States and in Canada, How much is made of the fact that this movie in the U.S., and I'm hearing this from you guys, and I've seen this on forums, is how much is being made of the fact that this movie is taking place in a country other than the U.S.? I'm wondering if, for me personally, and I don't know, Phil, you might feel the same way, if this movie had taken place in L.A. or, like, near the border with, you know, with the illegal alien issues and whatnot, I think it, the movie would have worked just as well for me, but I think... oddly enough, for American audiences, because it takes place in another part of the world that has a similar type of scenario going on that takes place in the southern U.S., that because it's outside of their boundaries, that the movie can sit back and be a little more relaxed, and then it resonates with them a lot more strongly. But for myself, if this movie would have taken place along some Texas-Mexican border kind of thing, it would have worked just as well.
Well, I agree and I disagree. Obviously, the reason it takes place there, I mean, my only problem with the movie, no, it's not a problem, I'll take that back. I mean, the allegory in the movie is not particularly subtle. It takes place in that place for a very specific reason. That's okay, it doesn't need to be subtle, and not everything needs to be subtle.
Sure.
But that's absolutely fine. But I do think that if this happened in any other country, in any other city, if a huge spaceship arrived and all these aliens dropped out and were stranded there and were unable to, let's say they were unable to defend themselves, and yet they had all this technology and all these weapons and stuff, I'm not so sure the outcome would be that much different. I'd like to have the optimism that we'd all welcome them and say, welcome to our place, let's show you how we make nice things, but I'm really not sure. And so it really... If it took place in the UK, in Canada, well, it'd be interesting to see it in Canada, certainly. I really don't think it would have worked. It totally would have worked, absolutely. And just to talk about that ending for a second, Jamie, I think one of the reasons I interpreted it as slightly sad, the reason I interpreted it that way is because all the way through, I don't believe that Vickers believes that Christopher's coming back for him. I don't think he believes it. He wants to, but in his heart, he doesn't really... He's never completely 100% trusted the guy. He wants him to get home, but at the end, he still doesn't trust the guy. So he's, you know, he's sat there, and it is his nightmare. He has completely transformed, but I'm not sure he believes.
He accepts it, though.
The ambiguity of the scene. It reminds me very much of, say, Let the Right One in that you could take a certain scene any number of ways, and it doesn't require you to take a giant leap of faith to think that something like one way could happen versus another, and that's what we'll lead into more with the discussion of our other topic down the line. You definitely have equal amounts of what could be. You know, it's possible Christopher could have been using Wilkes all this time, but we don't know, and it doesn't seem that way.
I don't think so, because even at the end, you know, when he says, like, run off, man, get in the ship, get the fuck out of here with your kid, man, just go now, I'll stop him. You know, what does Christopher say? No, we're a team, we're not running off, we're not leaving without you. He says, no, man, go right now. He's totally going to come back and say it. He's totally going to come back and cure him.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. After that, it's like, even, you're right, there, it does, the whole time you're going, who's playing who between this relationship? And at times, Wickes is playing Christopher and vice versa. But that moment, you know, Christopher's going to come back. In my mind, it becomes crystal clear.
Yeah.
Can I just ask one thing, guys? Because I don't know if you felt this way. Did you think the villains were just a little too one-dimensional, or did you think they were, but
I was more interested. It's the Wickes and Christopher story. It's the same thing. It's not excusing it, but it really is the same thing as Star Trek. It's like, yeah, we could have had a better villain, but it's Kirk
and
Spock.
Not really what the movie about.
The movie is about Kirk and Spock. In the same way, this movie is about Wickes and Christopher. So we could give more stuff, and I guarantee you there probably was in the cutting room floor, but it takes away from the two leads, and they were the villains were fine for what they were. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue. Yeah, they were pretty one-dimensional or two-dimensional. You know,
I'd say it wasn't so much the mercenary guy, because I mean that's great. That's the guy that you want to see get ripped to pieces. And what I loved was they kept holding it back.
Oh yeah,
there's so many moments where you think he's going to get it and it doesn't. It just keeps dragging it on, dragging on. Because they know that the audience knows it's going to happen. We just don't know when it's going to happen. And then 5 seconds before it does happen, we do know it's going to happen. And then it happens. I think that's great.
And yet again, you cheer. You know? I dare you not to.
I love his character. Because he was kind of like a Robert Duvall in Apocalypse Now. You know, he's walking around with all this bombing and destruction going on, but the guy never gets a scratch on him until till the very end when he finally does get nailed.
Yeah, and and this is his high. Like, this is him when he's happy. Like, when he's not doing it, he's like, fuck everybody. I hate everyone. Now it's like, awesome. You know, this is what I am on the world to do this kind of shit. You know?
But it wasn't so much him. It was just the guys in charge, the guys in the suits. You know, they find out he can fire this alien technology, and then you can literally hear hear them laughing evilly.
The dollar signs clicking up.
Well, I mean, also the more particularly the father-in-law. You know, I mean, that's where it becomes clear. It's like, oh, okay, you know, you don't like the guy. He stole your little girl away from you, and he's an alien, so you're gonna exploit the shit out of this, which is basically what happens. But you're into the movie.
Yeah, that dude was cold. He was really cold.
My God. Yeah, and then, like, the dog... Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, his wife was kind of an idiot. I mean, like, granted, you're scared and you don't think logically when shit like this happens. Granted, this never happened before. But, you know, really? You're going to... I did kind of wonder throughout the movie where I was like, oh, come on. Like, you're going to really take your dad's word at this over your husband who's like, I don't know. Go ahead.
Dude, the guy is throwing up every 5 seconds. I couldn't have a relationship with someone like that.
Yeah, but then she's like, no, what I mean is, like, he's going around and saying, like, yeah, he fucked a prawn. That's what happened. It's like, yeah, you guys never got along to begin with, so I'm going to take your word over my husband's. It's like, you know, come on.
Well, it's also because he's high up in the company.
Yeah.
So he would know more than Wilkes would. So, you know, it's also her dad. So there would be the feeling of some more trust there. Because, you know, she doesn't know what happened to him, so she's relying on him for information. That's why, you know.
True, but you got to, at one point, you got to pick the lines. Like, your husband or, you know, the man you chose to spend the rest of your life with or your dad who, you know, at some point you got to get away from your parents and start your own life. So it's like, you're going to, I don't know, that just seemed kind of like, you know, where did you see Wickes say, like, you know, like while you're watching TV, like, I'd fuck the shit out of that prawn if I could. You know, come on.
They don't, but it's just misinformation. So what can you do?
Yeah, I agree with you, Jamie, because just looking at the two of them, like, the guy basically won the lottery marrying her to begin with. Like, she's...
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He's way out of his league, so why would a guy like that have to fool around with somebody else is beyond me, too.
Which is another point with another movie we're going to talk about in a few more minutes, actually.
Boy, we're going to tease the audience.
We are.
We're turning the screws on them.
They think we're talking about Avatar, probably. No.
What are they talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
I will go back to this movie.
I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10. I'm going to say it's my favorite film of the year so far. I don't know where
it's
you guys
think. It's a very good pick, actually.
It
is one of my top films of the year. It's in my top 5, no questions asked. Like, I already know what my top 5 best movies of this year are so far. I haven't seen enough to really... But District 9 is definitely in the top 5, no questions asked. It's not number 1, obviously. You guys know what that is. Bastards, but you know, it's in my top 5. I fucking love this movie.
If you love science fiction film, it's been a great year.
Yes, it has.
It has. It has.
Yes, it has.
In fact, this decade has some very good science fiction on top of that, both in the major and in the little sense too.
Yeah, and Bastards was a great science fiction movie. You know, didn't happen.
That's a different kind of fiction.
I know.
I agree with the fiction.
I don't think there was any science involved, unless you count the burning of film. So. That's science, but
there you go. That's
I will say one more thing about District 9 is the fact that, and you know, it goes back to what I've said this before. The fact it was $30 million
for
the
God.
Amount of detail that was put into this movie. I mean, I'm looking at in the scene where when the mech Wickes is in goes down and he opens it back. And it's clearly CGI when it's up close. When they open that thing up and you just see the sweat just dripping down off that thing and all the other fluid, and you're just seeing all the garbage and waste. And the fact that that's being reflected on the prawns, that's unbelievable. Those effects. I mean, it just blows my mind. I would say one thing about what Lou and Phil were saying about if those aliens had been in, like I said, the U.S. And that's a good question. I mean, the fact these are not really humanoid aliens. We've had movies where more humanoid aliens come to the U.S. A great example would be Alien Nation.
Yes.
And in that movie, they were later integrated into the L.A. society after they lived out in the desert for a while. As to whether or not you would be having that type of, life, I don't know. But that's a good point, though, because these are not, skilled aliens.
No.
What you learn is that these are basically worker bees.
They
don't know how to do anything.
They are refugees. It was never said, but it was basically implied that, like, whoever was their queen or king is dead. They're on their own.
They don't know what to do.
Yeah, and so it's amazing you see Christopher, who's clearly a brain, and I don't know if he was a top official. He probably wasn't. He was probably one of those, like, scientists in the back who was, like, doing all the hard work, and then someone else took all the credit for all his hard work and is a genius. But, you know, I don't know. It's, I'm at a loss for words how great this movie was. It really was.
I just know, as I said, it's the uniqueness of the situation. I always would want to know. I mean, for me, I mean, oh, people are talking about, like, well, where's District 1 and District 2? And it's
who,
like,
cares?
Exactly. Although, I'm, like I said, I would have been curious just the idea that, for me, in the historical perspective, if that, you know, what had happened to the country, because you have to deal with those aliens. It's like, I, you know, it's a different kind of, different type of show to discuss this. But I was, you know, like, how would that have affected apartheid and all that sort of thing? Because it wouldn't have been able to survive as long,
right,
at least to me anyway. But, you know, what do I know? I just know it's, like I said, you're seeing something you don't normally see before. I mean, hell, I hadn't seen a movie set in South Africa since Standard several years ago, so.
Mm-hmm. And that is the great, if a science fiction movie is done well, it raises those great kind of questions, and that's what District 9 did.
That's right. It could be set anywhere. You know, that's, yep, just, as Phil said. I mean, that's, yeah, that is great science fiction. It represents, it's, yes, it's South Africa. It's also the South in the 1950s and 60s. It's also, you know, in Texas and the border right now. I mean, it's so many things, and yet not really. That's greatness.
I just know for America, you don't necessarily, I mean, you have ghettos and you have slums,
yes,
but not to the extent of what goes on in the third world.
It's filled.
Whether it be in South Africa or whether it be, you know, like in Rio or Mexico City, that is far worse. So
yes, it is.
I don't even think it would even compare.
Well, I just think about, I mean, if you think about the religious implications of it and the problems that just any mass population has right now with unemployment, with overpopulation, just makes me think. I just wonder. I mean,
and gentlemen, this is what would happen if E.T. really did come here. You know, you think it would be all nice and shit. Nope.
And he brought the family.
Exactly. There you go, Lou. That's the closing argument.
But E.T.'s small. He could fit. You take up less space.
We don't know how old. Yeah, but
E.T. is small, but not a spaceship to him.
Yeah, but E.T. is also a kid. He's like the same age as Alien. They're alien race, so we don't know how big he's going to get. I'm just saying, you know, it could be like that old science fiction story, Red Planet, where, like, it's a little thing right now, but, like, in hundreds of years, he's going to be huge. I think that was the story, Red Planet. I could be wrong. But anyway. Great movie. So, okay, we got my rating, Lou's rating, Phil's rating. What do you think, Ed? What's your...
Well, I've said this before. It's one of the top movies of the summer, and I would certainly say for the year. It's not... I mean, it was just amazing. I mean, this would make it such a great companion piece, just, I mean, in terms of science fiction with Moon. I wouldn't, you know, I can't... You know, I've said it before on this.
It's a double feature.
Yeah, it would be, although, I mean, it's two different types of science fiction, but still. You know.
But, you know, great science fiction, it doesn't matter, you know.
True. I mean,
anyway,
it'd be two completely different films in tone, though. So, but still amazing works for such low budgets.
It's the beginning of a real career, I think. I really hope it. I hope it is. We just don't know what's going to happen. But at the very least, we have it. If nothing, if he never makes another movie, if he becomes the who's the person who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird? I forgot offhand. I completely forgot.
Harper Lee.
If he's the Harper Lee of filmmaking, then it's worth it. With this kind of film, it's so great.
And it's funny you mention that about being the Harper Lee of filmmaking, which also leads also, once again, into our next topic. So I think this will work out well.
Segue into it, sir.
Showing up.
The torture is over.
Yeah, the torture's over. Go ahead, Ed. Introduce it, sir. Go ahead.
Well, as was mentioned earlier, you know, this is being September. We're in the dead zone of film, as I like to say. So every so often I suggested this to Phil and Jamie, you know, who do operate this show. You know, why don't we have basically a kind of film discussion club where we select a movie. It could be somewhat random, but, you know, it has some relevance on what's going on today, you know, whether, you know, and the parallels could be any sort of thing. So for this week, I went with a film that, it sticks in my mind a lot, you know, for personal reasons. I went with Robin Williams' One Hour Photo. This was a film done by Mark Romanek back in 2002. At the time, this was part of the Robin Williams Terror Trilogy, as I like to say, from Death to Smoochie, Insomnia, and this movie, all released in the same year. For me, this was the first film I saw when I was in college, university, for you foreign listeners. And for me, the parallels are pretty evident. For one, you have Robin Williams getting a lot of press for his work in World's Greatest Dad, where he's playing an understated role. Also, you have director Mark Romanek, who's known for music videos, most notably, I would say, Nine Inch Nails is Closer. basically screwed himself out of a career because he was originally supposed to do Wolfman and immediately walked out. And then, as I said, with you know, we were talking about all our parallels with District 9. But, I you know, this is not a movie that, you know, it should get a little bit more award than it has been, in my view. Especially for Robin Williams.
Yeah, I mean, that's what annoyed me. That was the year of, like, Chicago and all that jazz. And it's like, whatever, gimmick. Who cares about that movie now? Exactly.
Right.
No one. This is a film, though, man. I hadn't seen it since it came out. I rewatched this weekend. Phil did, too. Ed did also. God damn, man, this is a fantastic film. I mean, and
I guess I should go up in a little bit of the plot also. So,
You know what? Fuck him. People are going to – we'll let them look it up themselves. Actually, right. I shouldn't say that. No, it's basically about actually, you can say it better than I can. Ed, go ahead.
Well, basically, Robin Williams plays Cy Parrish. He's a photo technician. Now, this movie was 2002. I don't think people are still using film, basically.
No,
so
it's gone.
It's a little bit of, you know, it's a little bit dated, so what? But at the time, and obviously we all did this, is that when you shoot a roll of film, you go drop it off at the drugstore or wherever, and like, you know, you can get it back in an hour or whenever you get your photos back in an envelope and you go flip through them. The idea that, you know, Robin Williams' character is this kind of – he's an anachronism. He's an old guy. And he's just kind of there. It seems very out of place, especially for a job that seems like, you know, pretty much any schmuck could do it, essentially. And they talk about that in the movie, where he's complaining about that because they're not doing it the way he does. And
yeah.
So you have him working behind the counter at some, like, Walmart-like store. So there in comes his family. You know, he's in a suburban area. In comes his family, the Yorkins. And Connie Nielsen's the
mother.
Michael Vartan from Alias is the husband, and there's this kid who hasn't shown up in anything since. And they just bring their photos in. So there seems to be a little bit of, you know, they're regular customers, they say hi. And then you later learn there's far more sinister things going on. I don't know if we want to go whole hard.
We're going to go into this whole hard spoilers. There's no way we can't talk about the ending. No way we can't talk
about it.
But
we'll go into that further. I think we got the base. But basically you learn there's much more, you know... Cy becomes much more – you learn is very obsessed.
He's been obsessed with them
for
years. Yeah, the kid's 9 years old. He's been following them for at least 10 since they were pregnant with the kid. So at the very least, we know he's been following them for 10 years at the least.
He's been working behind the counter of this store for about 10 years.
Oh, more than that. Yeah, he's been saying like he's been doing the film for 20 years actually.
Well, he's been doing film work for like 20 years. So that presents a very good question as to whether or not he's been doing this before. But there's this great reveal in the movie where you see him just sitting there in his apartment. It's very the symbolism is kind of is kind of obvious, I would say. But he's just sitting there in his apartment alone. It's very sterile, very artificial, and he's just sitting there watching TV. He's watching a Simpsons episode, all that up. And then there's this pan up from the back, and it reveals that there's this wall. It's a huge wall, obviously overly exaggerated, that's just coated with pictures of the Yorkins.
Chronologically,
it's a very creepy reveal.
Chronologically, from the time that she was pregnant with the kid to the time to now to his birthday party when the film starts, his ninth birthday party. I don't know, man. This film, you know, Romanek said in the Charlie Rose interview on the DVD, he said that he spent a solid year in post. It shows, and that's the greatest, and that's a great compliment. I mean, every shot, even the inserts. Feels like it was meticulously made. You know, a lot of thought went into this. It also feels like a movie that was confirmed to me by Ed. I don't think this is set on the DVD. I just sort of assumed this, where it was independently made and then someone just picked it up for distribution, which was Fox Searchlight. Because I can't imagine a studio bankrolling this kind of movie. Even with Robin Williams, it was, you know, I don't know if he's really bankable as – I don't even know if he's bankable anymore. But at the time, he certainly was more. I don't see how people would put money into this.
Hmm. He's not bankable in a comedy. I mean, RV, License to Wed, they
all
crashed.
Well, RV made money. License to Wed tanked, but RV actually made a lot of money, sadly.
Did it?
Yes, it did. Yeah, no, I'm sorry to... Yeah, I know.
No, I'm wrong. I'm sorry about that. I was completely wrong. You know, it's interesting. One thing I remember a couple of weeks ago when Ed and I were talking about Moon, which we'd seen, I said how the production design and the horrible... completely all white surfaces, 4x4 white surfaces of that moon base, I would go out of my friggin' mind living on that thing. Let me tell you, folks, I would gladly live on that moon base for the rest of my life than work one day in that horrible looking drugstore that Cy has to work in. It's a great example of production design and cinematography just by itself, showing you the hell and the monotony of what it must be like to be this man and live this life and work 9 to 5 at this fucking place.
Oh, it's not even 9 to 5. He's not doing anything except for eating, sleeping, and working at that store. I mean, the movie, like, one of the early shots is him coming in, like, at 5 or 4 a.m. I mean, he has nothing to do except for develop film. I mean, this is the kind of... Also, he's very, very scared of sunlight. So it's interesting to see scenes with him out on the open during the day. He's always under shade, if you notice. He's never directly in sunlight. You know, and he...
Well, he's very pale.
Yeah.
He's very, very washed out, you know.
Has a very Chancy Gardner kind of look to him, I just thought about, actually. Although it's different mannerisms, I wonder if that was on purpose. You know, the lead from the great Hal Ashby flick being there. I'm sure you gentlemen have seen that in the film.
Right. I would say, though, but unlike Chauncey, I mean, you know, size is... Once again, it plays in that sinister nature. It's just it's very, very understated. And the fact that there's something very not... There's just something off with this. Because, like I said, and this goes back to what Romanek was talking about, the idea that, you know, if you go into a store, once again, the economy being the way it is, it's different. But you would see sometimes, like, an older man, like a guy in his 40s, working basically like something that, like, a teenager would be doing.
Yeah.
Just something not right. You know, it's like, well, what's going on? It's, you know, it just seems out of place. And,
well, I don't necessarily think that.
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know. What makes me wonder, I was thinking about this when I was actually shaving this morning. I was like, you know, why does he pick, and there's a scene where he's at I think it's a garage sale, and he's going through old pictures, and he notices a picture of a woman, just an old picture. We don't know who it is. It's essentially, I guess, a prom photo, I think.
Just some random photo.
Yeah, and it's probably from high school, and he buys it, and he says that's a picture of his mother. And I thought about it, and I was like, well, why does he actually follow the family? And I thought about
it. Because he wants that.
Well, he does.
Later in the movie.
He does want that. But the thing, though, is that if you think about it, you know, the picture of the girl who he tells the woman, the wife, that that's my mother, it actually kind of looks like the woman herself. The Connie Nielsen girl.
I didn't think about that. But I mean,
it actually looks like. It almost makes you wonder. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's. Maybe. Is that why he followed them? Because it kind of reminds him of what is. She kind of looked like his own mother. I don't know, it just sort of hit me. I was like, that's an interesting choice, the picture that looks like someone like that, who does kind of bear, not a striking resemblance, but certainly looks similar to Connie Nielsen's character, Nina Yorkin,
On the other hand, there is that, you know, that thing that happens only in the movies, the fact that she happens to be the only stunningly beautiful woman among his regular customers. You know, he goes through his list of regular customers.
I disagree. There's some pretty...
Weeks?
Oh, come on. The chick who, you know, the husband is banging, she's pretty attractive. She's a regular customer.
Erin Daniels?
Well,
oh, is she
a regular customer?
Yeah, she's a regular customer.
She said she had came there before, and then he recognized her in one of the pictures. But I think, you know, he just... I mean, I never thought of it about when he bought that random photo. I just thought it was just that he just wanted to have... He was going to go to her, but he needed to, you know, cover up his past. So
that's
he just picked this picture of a you know, good looking woman to say that was his mother. So I never thought of anything more than that.
To me, it also says that, and we're going into even more spoilers. It says that it was the mother who made him do those horrible acts as a child in front of the camera, not a father.
I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I think that was more of a family thing. You never know who was the one responsible. That we do know in his past, at the end,
he was
sexually molested. But it was that we don't know, especially because when he's talking about coming down with, like, hepatitis all the time, it's like, well, what the hell does that mean? So, and pneumonia, and then...
Oh, that's right, with the kid. That's right.
What was he doing up in a tree and all that stuff? You wonder about that. And you know that the only thing you know definite about the guy is the fact that he had that past. What you don't know is anything more than that.
Yeah, you don't know if he killed his parents. You would assume that. We don't know. We don't know if his parents are alive or
dead.
Because
the cops never mention it. That's the thing. The cops never mention about – you don't know whether or not he got out of it. Obviously, he had to have gotten out of it at some point. You don't know if, like, the parents were arrested. You just don't – you just know that there was that horrific trauma. And it seemed like – now, and there's the thing where there seemed to be – there was that undercurrent when he goes to see the kid's soccer game, Jake's soccer game. There definitely seems to be that creepy pedophile undercurrent.
Yes, yeah, it is.
They're talking about the commentary, especially when he bends down to tie his shoe. They were wanting to be very careful about that.
Right.
But it definitely did, from what I could see, there was not that sexual thing.
No, he is asexual. He's about as asexual as you get. And that's the other thing he has similar to Chauncey Gardner. Chauncey, you know, didn't really have much of a pulse in that sense. Neither does Psy, really. Yeah, so I never really interpreted him as a child molester. He certainly, I mean, yeah, they have... They
looks like one, but...
He does look like
yeah,
one,
yeah, he
but
just conforms to that mental
But he's
image.
Not. He's not one. He's never... I don't even think the guy even remotely thought about sex. He's one of those people who is so traumatized that sex is automatically evil to him, even when it's like sex in a score is not evil at all. It's procreation. But it's the ultimate form of love, really, between two human beings. But he sees it as evil, because that's the only way he's seen it as. I mean, it's pretty... Again, the other thing I interpreted as is that he was molested as a child very young, like prepubescent, so he didn't even know what sex was. You know, this was all new to him. He was scared. He didn't know what it was. He didn't know why he has these feelings. So he shoves away any kind of sexuality to him. The way he acts, the way he dresses, the way he talks to people. I mean, there's none of that whatsoever.
It's not just sexuality, though. It's just regular, normal... social behavior.
Yeah.
He's a total void. So the only way he can experience feelings is through other people's lives.
And through pictures, you know.
The pictures are his portal into their lives, yeah.
Right.
It's a lot
but
like...
It's
a lot like Manhunter in that way, too. They use a similar sort of thing.
That's true, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, you get a picture, a glimpse of what had happened to him when he's exercising those demons in the hotel room, when he is and that was an interesting way how they played it, because you didn't know what he was gonna do, whether or not he was gonna actually kill, and it turns out he doesn't. He just basically assaults and sexually humiliates him. So, you know, and that was an interesting take.
It's a far better revenge if you think about it.
It is. Well, it's even worse.
The way when she's in the back. I mean, she's never going to fuck anyone again, probably. She's a mess.
Yeah, but what was the ultimate coup d'etat was the fact that he never took pictures at all. He never took pictures of those. He made them think he was the whole time. Really? I mean, like, oh, my God.
Oh, wait, are you sure about that?
Because yes.
They say in the interrogation room, there was a roll of film in the camera, and then there was a roll of film found in the hotel room. There were two rolls of film.
I don't know. I mean, I thought the pictures that they gave him at the end of the film, he took those in the hotel room. And it's pictures
Those were the ones that was the roll they found in his room. They talk about in the beginning, in the interrogation room, that we saw what you did. It's some pretty sick stuff. So, because there's two rolls.
Oh, okay. Like
one in the camera, one in the hotel room. It's clear at the end when he's looking at his pictures, he shot the roll of the stuff in the hotel room with one roll.
Okay.
Because the cop isn't going to say, we saw what you did, some pretty sick stuff, and it turns out it's hotel furniture.
I didn't think about that, actually. That's an excellent point. Fuck up
sure
on me.
He's not talking about just the scene that they found her naked in the bath and that they found him a wreck and they just...
I'm wondering.
That they would have seen the pictures, because they're talking about... He mentions, it's like, do you do your own lab work here, or do you send it out, you know, and it's... Yeah, they know he took the pictures. It's in the roll. I think had the cop, you know, it's a question of, like, what would he have done with the pictures had he gotten away with it, which obviously he wouldn't have. As to whether or not he would have, like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he would have gone back to his wife and showed her that, you know, that he's no good or something like that. I have no idea.
The greater question becomes, we talked about with District 9, we kept, you know, sort of teasing everyone earlier about it, what happens to Psy and that family afterwards? Because the very last shot in the film is very open-ended. It's a picture of him, snapshot, with the family. Clearly it's set after the events of this of what happened. Is it a fantasy? Well, did it really happen?
No, it's clearly. I mean, that was a good question. When I first saw this movie back in 2002, I felt like I wondered. But when I rewatched it yesterday, I knew for the fact that was in his head, because you see throughout the movie that he is constantly putting himself into the pictures. And more importantly, and I tried to figure this out, see if I can prove this, and I couldn't quite, is that you look at the clothes of the family in the last shot, you recognize that's the same soccer uniform he saw when he was meeting with Jay. And I was trying to figure out if he had seen I think it's Nina and Will Yorkin, like in those clothes, and then he's seeing himself. Because you look at him, he's wearing the exact same clothes in the interrogation room as he is in the picture.
Right.
More importantly, could you imagine, and I was talking about this earlier with the leaps of faith, how giant of a leap of faith it would have to be? I sexually humiliated your husband after he was cheating on you. You're going to let me in?
You know? Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, the way they ended it with the family is great in the sense that he's clearly been assaulted. He's sexually humiliated. But the fact is he cheated on her, and there's clearly that rift in the family. Are you going to let – you don't know how the family is going to react. But more importantly, how does she know that – is she going to let him in for doing that? No. He's clearly looking at the mirror, and he's imagining what he wants. And like I said, it just goes also to the fact that you see those clothes, and he's just putting himself in the picture like he did earlier with the Christmas shot.
It's so clearly, in my opinion, that's absolutely in his head. The question to me is also, did he get off today? The way I see that, at least, is that he probably is going to be a registered sex offender for the rest of his life.
I don't know if he's going to be a.
In the beginning of the movie, he's taking photos, and it says threat. I forgot what it says, but it's one of those like pictures.
Oh, that's right. When he took pictures of the boss's daughter to fuck with him. I know.
That's right. Funny.
I mean, it's clearly the guy's not going to get whether or not he would be put away for he's not going to get off scot free because he assaulted those two people in the hotel room, even though he didn't actually with the door. He didn't actually like. Hurt any, he didn't stab anybody, but he did assault them. So
He's not getting out. He's getting out, but yeah, under heavy probe. Like clearly, it's one of those things where it's like, go ahead, Phil. You had the take.
I was just interested to hear what you thought about this because either you're gonna say, well, that's interesting, Phil, or we already knew that, Phil, you idiot. The latter is more likely, and it's nowhere near as deep as what Ed was saying, but there's a scene, it's near the beginning of the movie, he sighs in his apartment, and then we cut to the little kid sitting on the bed, talking with his mother, saying how bad he feels for Sai because Sai has no friends, Sai's alone, and it wasn't till the second time I saw the movie that it occurred to me. And I'm pretty sure that scene didn't happen. That scene is in his head. That's what he wants the child to think. He wants the child to think that he's alone and feel sorry for him. Because think about how it's shot and how it's cut, how it cuts between those two scenes. He's thinking what he wants to be taking place in that house at that very moment. He wants the child to say, I feel bad for Sai, and the mother to...
That far, just because he interacted with the kid, but how is he going to envision what the bedroom looks like and have that kind of detail?
House. No, but the thing is, he's got pictures. They say we take tons of pictures of practically everything, so he's got an idea of what that house looks like.
We don't see that ever again. The only time where he's fantasizing like that is when he's thinking about being in the house, and what a violation of that house.
The fact
we caught him taking a dump, I was like, oh my God.
It could have been a number one.
Takes a leak sitting down?
Other than
you don't want to wet the seats. That's when you're being stealthy. I'm not talking from personal.
Yeah, sure, Phil. Yeah, we know.
I knew it was going to end like this. I knew this review was going to end like this. You were going to
ending up in the potty.
Yeah. But I was just interested in what you changing tact very quickly.
I agree with your take, Phil. I didn't think about that. I'm with you on that one, actually.
Thanks.
I don't know about that. I think that the kid genuinely feels that way. Even in the commentary, Romanek talks about that. And then the fact that the wife says that the kid is a bit sensitive.
Yeah. The kid's
Why would Sai think that? He doesn't know this.
The kid is the only... The kid is the only character who Sai is ever going to see again. And the kid's going to be older. Obviously, they won't let him near the kid, but it's going to be one of those things where in my head, it's like years later, he ends up seeing Sai again.
There's no way he's going to be in that area. They're either going to move, or he's going to have to be told you can't set foot near him.
Like, of all the characters who's going to see him again, it's going to be the kid. Because the kid he's still a kid. He doesn't really process that kind of shit. He's like 9. He doesn't get that kind of shit.
But no, the thing is, he doesn't really know him that well.
Yeah, that's true.
He meets him, like, behind the counter at the store, and then maybe once.
He's the guy who gives him shit, you know, gives him free stuff all the time, essentially.
But he didn't, you know, he said, I can't take this, so he gives it back.
Right.
You know, yeah.
That's the end of it.
Neon Genesis Evangelion. No toy needs to be that complicated a name, but that's the only way I know how to say that name.
Is that a real
Genesis like the anime. Evangelion.
Was that a real toy, or was that just like...
It is.
Oh, it is? Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a real toy. I just like, for some reason, everything about it was ultra white. It was, you know, it's a very, you know, just, I mean, once it goes to that sterility. And then the other funny thing, another personal thing, is the fact that my mother owned a car, the exact same car that Psy had, so, except there was a four-door.
That's creepy, dude.
Yeah.
I wouldn't look too much into it.
But the fact that the dealers were advertising this, too, actually. They were?
That's awesome. Yeah. As seen in the movie One Hour Photo.
People think it's like a... where we banked the wheel.
People think it's like a comedy or something. See, that's the kind of movie you need to do like a fake, a parody trailer to, and do it as a comedy. You know, as a kind of like Shining. You need to do one for One Hour Photo. I think. Yeah. No.
Okay. But wait, Jamie.
Yeah, really, go. Go
no
cut
one else
now.
Is gonna do it. You do it.
You don't think so? Maybe Mark Romanek will do it. He's not doing anything right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that goes back to making downfall clips.
It might be a little too late now.
Yeah, right. You have such great promise out of Romanek, but like I said, he fucked his own career. So he'll be doing music videos until the cows come home, but I don't know if this guy will do another movie with the reputation he has now because of the Wolfman.
It's even worse. I mean, directors get out of projects all the time. Either they quit or they're fired. This movie was about to, as I recall, and I could be wrong on this, this movie was about to start shooting in like less than a month or about a month. He walked. You don't do that. So, you know, I don't even know. I mean, what does he have next? He's got a movie listed on IMDb, which is not very reliable. To be fair, it's called Never Let Me Go, and it claims to be in post-production. I've never heard of the movie before. Probably going to be another independent film, but it's, man, I mean, it's only a second movie. I mean, my God. I just, it's like, oh, Keira Knightley's in it. Oh, it must be true then. We know how much, yeah, I know, we know how much your mother loves Keira Knightley, Phil. That's a joke.
If he teamed up with Robin Williams again, I think Robin Williams enjoyed working with him. If they teamed up,
no way of knowing. I mean, you know, that's there's no way of knowing.
Commentary seem to be fine on the commentary. I mean, I gotta say that DVD, very well put together.
The one downside is that when I had to rent the DVD, it was only in full screen, so I felt like I was being screwed over. Yeah, and I didn't even know it was full screen until I started the movie. I took the disc out of the case, like, oh god, damn it. Full screen.
Especially because the way that movie is shot, it's shot relatively wide.
Yeah.
So, because everything, and they say this in the commentary, is supposed to be framed like a photograph.
And that
especially in certain scenes, everything has a frame around it. Whether it's him looking in the mirror, his boss overseeing the shop floor, all sorts of things. Yeah.
So it's quite an impeccably well-made film, well-acted. I mean, you know, you forget that everyone will say Williams, obviously, because it's really a showcase for him. But you got to forget everyone else was really good in this flick, too. The Kid, Gary Cole, Bonnie Nielsen, Michael Vartan. You know, it's funny because Vartan's, you know, I guess, would he be considered the antagonist if any character is, or would it be... would it be the Gary Cole character, I wonder? Maybe there isn't.
Neither of them are antagonists.
Yeah,
Gary Cole's trying to do his job.
Yeah, that's right, actually.
He's not busting his balls. If you were in Gary Cole's shoes...
I'd have fired his ass. Oh, my God.
You would have fired his ass for a long time ago.
Oh, exactly. He's taking 90-minute lunch breaks. He's giving free shit. He's fighting with the tech guys, about, you know, the chemical guys.
The funny thing is, especially because of how blatant he is about the abuse of the photo system. And the fact that they just catch it, and it's like, these numbers are way off. Where the hell are these photos going? And he's not like, he's just, even just writes an extra set of prints on the envelope, and she doesn't notice.
Right.
You know, it's not exactly real sophisticated how he's getting away with it. So at some point, he was going to get...
It does make you wonder why they didn't, he's been working there for like 10 years at least. How come they didn't notice like sooner? That's why,
probably
because
they never looked at it, because they never gave him any trouble until recently.
That's a good point, actually.
That's my thinking, because it's like, as Gary Cole says, people are here just to save a few pennies on socks and paper towels. I think on the hierarchy of his stuff, so long as like there's not like fights breaking out at the photo counter or their complaints, I'm sure he doesn't care.
Yeah.
So, you know, more than likely they're not going to, you know, if nothing's happening.
But that's a classic theme, though, of anybody who's in a job that long, especially a customer service role. if they have nothing else in their lives, they big it up to be more important in the large scheme of how the world works than it actually is. I think this film should be seen by anybody and everybody who works in a customer service job. That's me, folks, because I deal with this every day. Especially one thing we were talking about, his attitude towards sex and sexuality before. It's not just, you know, that he's closed off, but you get the feeling everyone else is closed off from him. Well, one of the things I found most interesting about the movie and that I could relate to is when everybody who goes up to the desk, you get this first-person perspective of him looking at them, and none of them will look him in the eye. They look him in the eye when he hands them the photos, and then they look absolutely... they look around. They look anywhere but at him. I've seen that. I've seen that so many times. People just don't want to look at you. They want their things. They don't want to interact with you. They just want to take their fucking things and go. You're not there. You're not a person. You're just a service.
Well, particularly when you're working at a Walmart-esque retail store, you're not a person.
Which I never have, thank
you. Well, I mean, yeah, it's getting to the point where, you know, Walmart might as well buy this fucking country, you know, sadly.
Buy Marvel.
Yeah, I know. It's like, of all things for the mouse to buy, it's like, how about you buy Walmart instead? That's more your kind of thing. Or McDonald's or something, or Coca-Cola. You know, have Mickey drink a Coke. That's off topic, though.
Well, he does already, so...
That's true, actually. But anyway, but yeah, great movie.
Great, see it, folks.
Yeah, I see it. That's the only thing we can say. So
I would say it's also the fact that it goes against the whole idea of Robin Williams being serious with a beard. So
yeah, because that's
that insomnia that he really bucked the trend on that. So
he did, and then Death of Smoochie. I guess that's black comedy. So
Death of Smoochie. I mean, when I first saw that was some harsh stuff. I mean, that movie's got to be an acquired taste, to say the least. The fact that it's so out there and so mean, there was no way this movie was going to be a hit.
No. But
it's not funny. Well, I don't hate it, but it's not funny.
Well, thank God that Insomnia was a hit. Insomnia actually made a lot of money. It was very
successful.
Insomnia
was a hit. I remember this.
Yeah.
So.
Came out in June of 2002. It was Al Pacino's biggest opening weekend. That's right. So I remember that.
You're right, though, Phil. I mean, Death to Smoochie. I mean, the movie is just really mean. That, which is not funny, so necessarily. So.
But you gotta give it a
funny line in it. There's one line that made me laugh. What is it? Don't mess with the Parade of Light. They're the most ruthless of all the charities. That's a funny line. But that's the only time I laughed. I think it's the Parade of Light.
Yeah, but you have to give a movie. Yeah, but you also have to give the movie a lot of credit for being that mean spirited. Because there's always the executive says, "Let's lighten up a little bit," and you're like, "No, man, this is dark. We're gonna keep it as is." You have to give it a lot of respect in that regard, I think.
So, Roger, you want to give praise to a movie for being mean and hitting it?
You're not. It's not going to work. Don't even try it.
Okay, sorry.
It's an inside joke there, folks. The joke, of course, being that Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel infamously got it all. Did we mention this early in the show, or did we talk about this off air?
No, we
didn't,
actually.
We did it on the show? No, I don't remember. Did we? I don't fucking remember.
No, we didn't. We didn't.
We didn't? Okay.
No.
All right, well, basically...
Just not talk.
Yeah, we should just, like, dead air for, you know, what's now 70, 80 minutes. But no, basically, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert had it out about Full Metal Jacket back in 87, and Ebert thought movie didn't work. You know, it was very ambitious, but he didn't achieve it. You know, Siskel thought it did work, but then he critiqued him and said, "Look, but you gave Benji the Hunted a thumbs up, you didn't give this a thumbs up." And he basically said, well, that movie was aiming lower standards, and it hit those low standards. And he's like, so you're rewarding a movie for not even trying, basically. And they had it out, so go check it out, it's on the official website. And it's also, they said it on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, they kind of had it out also. It's probably one of their better film debates, in my opinion. That, and what was the other one they debated about? Blue Velvet, you guys should check out. That's a great discussion.
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
They had it out, my God. And granted, like,
Ebert was pissed. Oh, so about...
yeah. And then apparently they also had it out about Apocalypse Now, but since that film came out in 79, and the footage doesn't exist anymore to my knowledge, unless, who's that gentleman's name? First Magnitude decides to show back up and put more VHS tapes on YouTube, which I hope he does, because come on, dude. We miss you. I do, at least, and Phil does. So that's two people. But anyway...
There's a great one... it's okay. It doesn't matter.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead as we wrap up.
I was going to say, there's a great one where they talk about Indecent Proposal. Now, for you, for those who don't remember that movie, that's the movie where Robert Redford plays the billionaire who offers Woody Harrelson $1 million to sleep with Demi Moore for a night. And, you know, Siskel's talking about, because he's this man of traditional morality, is talking about how horrible this premise is and how implausible it is. And Ebert says, actually, I think they do it for a laugh. And he goes, what? You think any sane couple would do this for a joke? And then they just tear each other up. It's pretty funny. Anyway.
But anyway, so that's a wrap, folks. So this was a really great show. I must say, this is definitely a feature we're going to bring back more often. I don't think we have a title to it. I gave it a temp title called Moaning About a Movie. It might
it's a great
change.
Title.
It's okay.
Yeah, it fits. It works.
I guess so. Whatever. So next week's going to be Phil's pick. Phil will not tell us on air. He'll tell us off air probably what he's thinking about. But we're going to leave it as a surprise for you folks. So that's it for this week. Lou, thank you for joining us, sir, as always. Come back.
Thank you very much for having me.
Gentlemen, either one of you want to wrap up this week's podcast? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ed. It's your show.
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far. But I would say, you know, it's... I think this feature worked out very well. I think we had a very good discussion about 1 hour photo. And, you know, Phil, I look forward to your next pick. I hope to hell it's not Delgo. Don't make it. I will not have you abuse this new idea. You know, we don't really review crappy movies. You know, enough people do that as is. But, you know, that's basically it for me.
Oh, I can think of worse movies. I think of worse. I could force you guys to watch I Spit in Your Grave. But
oh, my God.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that. We don't need to watch that garbage.
Yeah.
I'm with Ebert on that one. Worst movie ever. I have to agree. Sorry.
Even worse than North? That's shocking.
Yeah, actually, because I don't think there's a scene in North where Julia...
Oh, yeah,
there's not a scene where Julia Louis-Dreyfus castrates Jason Alexander in a bathtub. I don't think so. It might be in the director's cut.
Yeah, it was... Yeah.
I'm gonna check...
Reiner was... Oh, my God. Anyway.
It could be in the European cut. Snip, snip. how clever of me.
Oh.
Not really. But anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. You have a great week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.